Today is Tuesday, November 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Despite Republican accusations of voter fraud in the U.S. presidential election, international observers say otherwise.
No instances of fraud or voting irregularities.
Plus, a look at the vice president-elect.
While I may be the first woman in this office, I will not be the last.
And China cracks down on wildlife trafficking. We'll have these stories and more next. Lawyers for Donald Trump's campaign are suggesting that there were voting irregularities in key battleground states, but a group of international vote monitors contradict those claims. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn starts us off.
Some of the president's allies are alleging voter fraud could be tainting the vote count, skewing results in favor of Joe Biden. Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel.
Any irregularities that have occurred, whether by malicious intent or incompetence, are investigated.
But international observers from the Organization of American States say they saw no instances of fraud or voting irregularities. These are foreign elections experts observing balloting in Georgia, Iowa, Maryland, Michigan, and the District of Columbia. They issued a statement. They agreed that there's an avenue to contest an election, but that candidates should act responsibly, presenting only legitimate claims, not unsubstantiated or harmful speculation. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr authorized federal prosecutors to investigate, quote, substantial allegations of voting irregularities in last week's election, a move that prompted the Justice Department official who oversees election crimes to step down from that position. Barr issued a memo to U.S. attorneys on Monday, copies of which were obtained by multiple news organizations, but he did not cite any specific instances of alleged fraud. Long-standing Justice Department policy has been to prohibit such investigations until election officials in each state certified their results to ensure that there is no interference from the federal government. Vice President-elect Kamala Harris made history this week when she became the first woman to ever win the election on a presidential ticket. VOA's congressional correspondent Katherine Gibson reports on the path that brought Harris to the second most powerful position in the White House.
A history-making moment in the United States. Vice President-elect Kamala Harris.
While I may be the first woman in this office, I will not be the last.
The 56-year-old Harris thanking her running mate, President-elect Joe Biden, and voters for choosing her to become the first Black and Indian American woman to serve as U.S. Vice President. Barbara Perry, University of Virginia.
We've had women at the Supreme Court. We have Nancy Pelosi as the Speaker of the House in Congress. Never in the executive branch have we had a woman vice president, and still not president. But not only that, but to have a woman of color, a woman from immigrant parents who came to this country for a better life.
The daughter of an Indian mother and a Jamaican father, Harris grew up in Oakland, California. A mural of her now on the school she was bused to as a child as part of racial integration efforts. Democratic Representative Barbara Lee.
She's broken so many glass ceilings for so many women.
A graduate of Howard University, an all-Black college in Washington, D.C., Harris became the first Black female San Francisco prosecutor beginning in 2004 and then California Attorney General in 2010.
Hands up!
During Black Lives Matter protests this summer, some progressives complained Harris had been a much tougher prosecutor than she let on, took contradictory positions on the death penalty, and failed to hold police accountable for misconduct.
This is a moment in time that is requiring us to fight.
Harris first made history in California when she was elected to the U.S. Senate. University of Texas professor Shannon Beau O'Brien.
It's important that people see people in power that look like themselves.
Harris, who speaks often about her role as an aunt and a stepmother, is married to lawyer Doug Emhoff, who will now be the second gentleman. an entirely new position in White House history. And while the most important job for a vice president is to be ready to step in for the president if needed, analysts say Harris may also make use of her historic firsts. University of Virginia professor Barbara Perry.
She could be a stateswoman representing the United States, but I think she'll travel around the United States as well to show that symbolism of what she's doing.
A new global role in the White House, celebrated halfway around the world in her ancestral village in India. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
World leaders have been giving their reaction to the victory of Joe Biden in the U.S. presidential election. But as Henry Ridgewell reports from London, some U.S. rivals, including China and Russia, are awaiting the outcome of legal challenges to the result.
Champagne corks were popping in Ballinar, Ireland, Saturday as the election results were being announced. The small coastal town was the home of Joe Biden's great-great-great-grandfather, and relatives of the president-elect celebrated their transatlantic success, including Biden's third cousin, Loretta Blewett.
All of a sudden yesterday, it just hit us out of the blue, so it was exciting, but we're absolutely thrilled and just can't really put it into words, really.
Biden has often spoken of his pride in his Irish roots. He has warned Britain that its exit from the European Union must not jeopardise peace in Northern Ireland. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said Sunday he was looking forward to working with the new administration.
I think there is far more that unites the government of this country and government in Washington any time, any stage, than divides us.
The European Union Commission President Ursula von der Leyen also welcomed the projected election victory of Joe Biden.
Together, we will address pressing global challenges. The corona pandemic and its economic consequences, climate change and the loss of biodiversity, the necessary rule book for the digital economy and society, global security, and the reform of the rules-based multilateral system.
But Europe should not necessarily expect an easy ride, says analyst Inderjeet Palmer of City University London.
Given the increasingly competitive environment, I think the US will continue to drive hard bargains. The trade agreements with the EU and Britain will be not easy. And I think NATO, yes, I think they will demand the European step up a lot more.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel appeared to acknowledge those challenges Monday.
Amerika ist und bleibt unser wichtigster Verbündeter.
She said that America is and remains Germany and Europe's most important ally. But it expects us, and rightly so, to make stronger efforts to take care of our security, she added. Europe hopes that Biden will seek to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal. Israel is vehemently opposed. In a video message congratulating Biden, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu did not mention the agreement. Netanyahu said he had known Biden for 40 years and described him as a big friend of the State of Israel. Iran's Foreign Minister Javad Zarif gave his reaction on Twitter. Trump's gone in 70 days, but we'll remain here forever. Betting on outsiders to provide security is never a good gamble. We extend our hand to our neighbours for dialogue to resolve differences, he wrote. China is in the midst of a trade war with Washington. Chinese state media said the election of Biden offered more predictability. In Hong Kong, where pro-democracy protests continue against Beijing, some fear a softer approach from the United States. Hong Kong resident Hoi, who did not want to give his family name, said, "I think at a time when totalitarian governance is rising in many countries, Biden's approach, though more peaceful or less forceful, is too gentlemanly." Both Beijing and Moscow have yet to give official comments on the election results, noting that there are ongoing legal challenges to the result by President Donald Trump. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The European Commission filed antitrust charges against U.S. online retailer Amazon on Tuesday. I spoke with Nicolas Pineau in Paris via WhatsApp to get the details.
Well, you know, it's the high-profile EU Antitrust Commissioner, Margrethe Vestager, who took the stage in Brussels today to talk about this investigation. It's a little bit technical, but let me break it out for you. So basically, the European Commission said that Amazon violate the antitrust rules in two different ways. First of all, the EU Commission says that Amazon is using non-public business data from independent sellers on its marketplace to benefit the company's own retail arm. So basically, they're saying that Amazon is a place where independent sellers can sell their products, but also that Amazon is selling its own products, and they're using data, and it's a breach of fairness against these independent sellers to have better prices, especially on the prime offer. So it's a little bit technical, but basically the European Commission is saying that they have nothing about the success or the size of Amazon, but they're going against its business practices. And they're also targeting, and that's the second thing, also what Amazon has been doing regarding the global sales and especially the practice on its marketing. They're saying, and I'm quote, that they have been the suspicion for the past almost 18 months. And that they're really looking into that.
Nico, what can you tell us about Amazon's response?
Amazon put out a statement today saying they disagree with the EU's assertion, and I quote, "We'll continue to make every effort to ensure that it has an accurate understanding of the facts."
Nicolas Pineau reports from Paris, France. And coming up later,
China says it's seen a spike in prosecutions for wildlife-related crimes in the wake of COVID-19. Up 66% from 2019.
This is VOA News.
A Los Angeles judge will hear arguments from Britney Spears' lawyer and possibly from the celebrity herself on Tuesday that her father should be removed as her conservator in favor of a corporate finance company. James Spears argues in his own filings that as her conservator, he saved his daughter's fortune and career. In a recent series of court maneuvers, Spears has sought greater say over her life and affairs, which for 12 years have been under the control of a court conservatorship run mostly by her father. Tyler Hubbard from Florida Georgia Line is the second artist who will miss a scheduled performance at the CMA Awards on Wednesday due to COVID-19. Hubbard posted on Instagram Monday saying he was asymptomatic and quarantining on his bus outside his home. It comes days after another artist, Lee Bryce, also revealed he tested positive and would not perform on the show. America has a new Miss USA. 22-year-old Asia Branch of Mississippi was crowned Monday night at Graceland, the Memphis, Tennessee home of Elvis Presley. This is Lizzie Knight with AP Showbiz Minute.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. As we heard on yesterday's program, drug maker Pfizer has announced that its COVID-19 vaccine appears to be 90% effective in trials. On Monday, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration granted the emergency use of the first experimental antibody treatment for COVID-19. Eli Lilly's bamlanivimab is a monoclonal antibody, or a synthetic copy of the antibody the immune system uses to fight infection. Trial data shows that the one-time infusion of Eli Lilly's treatment reduced the need for hospitalization or emergency room visits in high-risk COVID-19 patients. The world has reached nearly 51 million confirmed cases of COVID-19, according to statistics tabulated by Johns Hopkins University in the U.S., while about 33.2 million people have recovered after contracting the novel coronavirus, more than 1.25 million have succumbed to it. Australia has recorded another day of no locally transmitted coronavirus cases, and health authorities there say that there are now fewer than 90 active COVID-19 infections in the whole country. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
For three consecutive days, Australia has recorded no new cases of community transmission in its relentless fight against COVID-19. Victoria, which was at the centre of a second wave of infections, has reported its 11th consecutive day of no new cases or fatalities. More disease control restrictions have been eased in the state capital, Melbourne, as one of the world's longest coronavirus lockdowns comes to an end. but some restrictions remain. Masks are still mandatory in Victoria. And authorities say that Remembrance Day services to commemorate the end of the First World War on November 11 won't go ahead because of limits on gatherings. Large crowds will also be banned from Sydney's famous New Year's Eve fireworks. The midnight display will go ahead, but will be much shorter than normal. Prime harbourside viewing areas for the New Year's fireworks display will be exclusively reserved for frontline health and emergency workers. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian.
We'll be releasing final details very shortly, but we wanted to make it clear that unless you've been given a ticket to one of the designated areas or unless you have a booking at a restaurant or a cafe, please do not expect to go to the CBD for New Year's Eve.
Australia has detected 27,600 coronavirus infections since the pandemic began. 907 people have died. Health officials have said four main factors contributed to Australia's relative success in containing the highly contagious virus. The closure of its international borders to foreign travellers in March, mass testing, sophisticated contact tracing, and adherence to distancing and hygiene protocols. Many borders separating Australia's states and territories were closed to curb the spread of the virus. Queensland authorities said Tuesday they were hopeful of allowing travel with Victoria early next month. Officials in South Australia have also been meeting to discuss the reopening of its border with neighbouring Victoria. Australia's international borders aren't expected to reopen until next year. As summer approaches, health authorities are urging Australians not to be apathetic or complacent about the dangers of COVID-19. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Armenian protesters stormed the government house in the capital of Yerevan on Tuesday, demanding to see the prime minister after he signed a ceasefire deal with Azerbaijan and Russia. Reuters reporter Gloria Sow has more.
The declaration follows 6 weeks of heavy fighting in the contested Nagorno-Karabakh region, sparking fears of a wider regional war feared to have killed thousands. The territory is internationally recognized as part of Azerbaijan, but populated and until recently fully controlled by ethnic Armenians, who have been relentlessly pushed back by Azerbaijani forces. Russian President Vladimir Putin later announced Russian peacekeeping troops would be deployed along the front line in Nagorno-Karabakh and in a corridor between the region and Armenia.
Internally displaced persons and refugees are to return to Nagorno-Karabakh and bordering areas under the supervision of the High Commissioner of the United Nations for Refugees. There will be an exchange of war prisoners, other detainees, and exchange of the dead. All economical and transport contacts to be unblocked. Transportation will be supervised with help of Russian Border Service.
The deal is likely to be seen as a sign that Russia is still the main arbiter in a region it regards as its own backyard. Russia has a defense pact with Armenia and a military base there, while Azerbaijan has been backed by staunch ally Turkey. Under the deal, Azerbaijan will get to keep all of its territorial gains, and ethnic Armenian forces must hand over control of a slew of other territories between now and December 1st. Azerbaijan said Monday it had seized dozens more settlements in Nagorno-Karabakh. It also claims it's retaken much of the land that it lost in a 1991-94 war, which killed an estimated 30,000 people and displaced many more. Armenia, however, has denied the extent of Azerbaijan's territorial gains. Three ceasefires have failed in the past 6 weeks, and Azerbaijan's superior weaponry and battlefield gains have reduced its incentive to seek a lasting peace deal.
That was Reuters' Gloria Sow. Sudan's state-run news agency says at least 30 armed Ethiopian troops and large numbers of refugees fleeing the fighting in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region have crossed the closed border into Sudan. Ethiopian state TV says troops have seized an airport in the northern Tigray region during an offensive against local leaders who have defied Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's authority. Hundreds have been killed in an escalating conflict that some fear could slide into civil war. Saeb Erekat, a veteran peace negotiator and prominent international spokesman for the Palestinians for more than three decades, has died weeks after being hospitalized with the coronavirus. He was 65. Afghanistan's intelligence agency said Tuesday that they had killed a senior regional al-Qaeda member in southwestern Afghanistan, accusing the insurgent Taliban of harboring him. Under a deal with the United States signed in February, the Taliban agreed to cut ties with international militant groups, including al-Qaeda. The Taliban, in response to a request for comment, said they were investigating the issue. China prosecuted more than 15,000 people for wildlife-related crimes in the first 9 months of 2020, according to state prosecutors, as authorities moved to enforce a trafficking ban imposed after the COVID-19 outbreak. Reuters' Brian Wood reports.
China says it's seen a spike in prosecutions for wildlife-related crimes in the wake of COVID-19, up 66% from 2019. The country's lucrative but poorly regulated wildlife trade came under fire in January after the first outbreak of COVID-19 was linked to a wet market in the city of Wuhan. Scientists believe the pandemic originated in horseshoe bats and infected humans through an intermediary species, possibly pangolins. In February, Chinese legislators passed a resolution banning the sale and consumption of wild animals like bats, pangolins, exotic birds, and Arctic foxes. China's prosecutor general's office says after that, more than 15,000 people have seen legal action taken against them in the first 9 months of 2020. Some exceptions to the ban were open for uses in traditional medicine. Since then, two major wildlife breeding provinces offered to exchange animals for cash so hunters and breeders could switch professions. Chinese prosecutors warned that much of the illegal wildlife trade had shifted online, with the exotic pet market a new threat to public health and the safety of animals.
Brian Wood reports for Reuters News. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Tanzanian authorities are cracking down on the opposition after they called for new elections and protests to challenge a flawed presidential election held October 28th. Indeed, the main opposition presidential candidate, Tundu Lissu, was arrested and then released, according to press reports. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said on Twitter, "We are deeply concerned by reports of election irregularities, politically motivated arrests, and violence during Tanzania's elections. We urge authorities to fully address concerns of irregularities and will review allegations of the use of force against civilians." These irregularities call into question Tanzania's commitment to democratic values, said State Department Deputy Spokesperson Kale Brown. While the Tanzania Election Commission declared President John Magufuli the winner of the presidential contest, the United States remains deeply troubled by the impact of the irregularities, arrests, and violence on the results. The U.S. continues to urge restraint by all parties and peaceful resolution of any disputes. Tanzanian authorities need to investigate allegations of irregularities and violence by security forces and ensure that all candidates can peacefully address electoral disputes. The United States calls on the government of Tanzania to respect the human rights and fundamental freedoms of all, including their freedom of expression and association and the right of peaceful assembly, and to promote internet freedom and free and open access to information. The United States, in coordination with its partners, will consider visa restrictions as appropriate to hold accountable those responsible for human rights abuses and election interference. The Tanzanian people, like people everywhere, deserve transparent and accountable governance, equal treatment under the law, and the ability to exercise their rights without fear of retribution, said Deputy Spokesperson Brown. In order for U.S.-Tanzanian relations to prosper, all stakeholders in the political process must be represented and able to exercise their human rights and fundamental freedoms.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.